the wake of a summer of bloodshed in Missouri's two big cities, the legislature's Black Caucus is calling for Governor Mike Parson to add action on gun violence to the upcoming special session agenda. But Parson and other Republican leaders say there's no chance of that happening. The governor is saying that the special session is not the place to address such a far-reaching issue. On the agenda is a tax issue affecting mostly rural car buyers. But the Black Caucus is saying that's not enough in the wake of the murders of children in St. Louis and an ongoing onslaught of homicides in Kansas City. They say the cities are in crisis and that the state needs to act. With us now are two members of the Legislative Black Caucus. They are Representative Ashley Bland Manlove. She's a Kansas City Democrat. She is also vice chair of the Missouri Black Caucus. Representative Manlove, nice to have you here.
Good morning.
From St. Louis is Democratic Representative Lakeisha Bosley. She joins us from the studios of St. Louis Public Radio. Representative Bosley, it's nice to have you too.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Representative Manlove, you've asked for help next month. The governor has said no. The special session is not the place. What's your reaction to that?
Unfortunately, I am not surprised due to other legislation that has been passed in the past session that was not for the betterment of most of our constituents. I'm excited to possibly have a conversation behind closed doors with the governor to discuss this. But I think that special session is the perfect place to have the discussion where everybody could be focused on one topic.
I'm curious, what would you say to Governor Parson behind closed doors? What's the message that a representative from Kansas City's east side at a time like this would be?
We are in peril, and it is time for the state to not be afraid of other interests, of outside interests.
Like and the NRA?
Whomever it might be. Mm-hmm. And make sure that we're actually working in the best interest of our constituents. Children are dying. Innocent children are dying. And even if you are pro-Second Amendment, I think you want to preserve innocence.
Representative Bosley, I'm wondering what your reaction is to the governor saying no, that the special session will not be the place to deal with gun legislation.
Well, just like, you know, Representative.
Are you there, Representative? Okay, the two of you, Representative Manlove, are talking about the need to give the state's two big cities the power to deal with this run of violence we've seen here. Describe to us the legislation you'd like to see get passed here.
Well, there are a plethora of options that we can take. Right now, we were all kind of settled on giving the individual municipalities leeway in the state statute so that they can have authority over what the state ruling is or what the state statutes are.
This is on gun legislation.
Correct.
The city should be able to pass laws that might be distinct unto themselves and not applicable to the entire state.
Right. Now, having further conversations with some of my colleagues, we might need to revamp that and make it more maybe the charter counties, just to make it more cohesive, since there are lots and lots of municipalities, even between Jackson County and St. Louis County. So we might have to take that bit of a larger scale. We don't want to infringe upon any of the previous criminal justice reform that we have made headway on. But definitely bringing it in so that, you know, what happens in rural Missouri is very different than what happens in urban and suburban Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
The rules cannot be, in this instance, about the way we handle firearms and munitions is not the same. So we'll still have to. We're going to have a meeting as a collective group to figure out what our final consensus is.
Right.
But we definitely think it needs to be brought down to a local level.
Representative Bosley, are you back with us now?
Yes, I am here. Hopefully you can hear me this time.
Yes, I can. Thank you for bearing with us here. I'm wondering what your reaction is to Governor Mike Parson saying no to the idea of taking up gun legislation in the special session.
Well, you know, like Representative Bland Man Love just said, you know, it's not a shocker, but it's very infuriating for the call and the need of the people in our specific areas to say, hey, we need help. We need you to intervene. We need you to do something. And for it to just be a blatant no, this isn't the avenue. This isn't the place. But it's when is the avenue? When is the place? When is the time for us to step in and say, no more deaths, no more innocence should be lost and spilled in our streets?
You know, Representative Bosley, you know, if lawmakers from rural Missouri could come into St. Louis right now and see what you've been seeing, how impactful do you think that would be?
I mean, I think that they would see that there is a dire need. You know, these are not just handguns that are being out here in the streets. These are literally military grade weaponry, AR-15s that these kids are toting around and, you know, carrying out just openly. And we need to do something legislatively. And like Representative Bland Man Love just said earlier, yes, we do need to have municipal and local governments pretty much dictate their gun laws, but there are many counties within the state. So it may be some blurred lines there. And, you know, but the conversation needs to be had, and it needs to be had now.
Representative Bosley, your mayor just yesterday came out and said there needs to be a change in gun laws so that young kids can't walk around with assault rifles in their possession. Your take on that is, I assume you agree with that?
I completely agree. It doesn't need to be so accessible. The fact that right now, under the current law and the current statutes that we have, you do not have a license or permit to even sell ammunition. Anybody could sell ammunition if you just want to set up shop. You can just sell it wherever. If Quick Trip wants to sell ammunition right now, they can. That is a problem. We're making it much. We're making it very easy and very accessible to people to get these bullets and ammunition to create these crimes. I completely agree.
I'm wondering, how scared are your constituents in St. Louis right now?
Very scared. The young boy Xavier, 7-year-old Xavier, literally was killed blocks away from my home, in my community, in my neighborhood, and that within itself broke the neighborhood. There was a visual and everything, but you can see the tight-knitness of the community coming together, but the fracture, it is fractured now.
And it's fractured why?
It's fractured because they feel like there's no one listening. There is no one out to assist. And we're doing everything we can. But when you're in a Republican controlled super majority, there is not much when, you know, they love their guns. And that's not to attack their Second Amendment right. You have the right to bear arms. However, there is a different need. In the state of Missouri, guns are used for hunting. It's just who and what we're hunting. That's completely different.
Representative Manlove, again, you represent a district on Kansas City's east side. What are your constituents feeling and saying these days?
There's a mixed emotion of sadness and anger. Sadness because most of us are touched by this violence within 1 or 2 degrees of separation. So if it's not your niece or nephew, it's your friend's niece or nephew. And it's hard to see anybody go through that kind of pain, especially, you know, nobody wants to see death before your ripe old age. Mm-hmm. And to have children shot down at, you know, under the age of 10 before they can even, you know, learn life and experience that beauty is heart-wrenching. And then there's anger. I know that there's the saying, guns don't kill people, people kill people, but it's a lot easier to kill people when those guns are readily accessible mm-hmm. and available. And there are minimal criterias to stop people who should not have guns to get those. Me being a veteran myself, I am very much for, I understand the need or the want and the desire to be able to protect yourself, because that's what the Second Amendment was about. But I don't think that we need, I think that's gone too far. Mm-hmm. It's just gone too far, and people are angry that no one is stepping in to stop it.
Representative Bosley, how many children have been killed in St. Louis the last couple of weeks?
13 under the age of 21.
That's a pretty high number.
That is a very high number, and that is within a two-month span. We're looking at, we buried Xavier on Saturday, and we lost Journey on Friday. Eight-year-old Journey on Friday at a jamboree. She was just at a football game of, you know, many schools coming together and just in celebration of kicking off the new year of football season.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking this morning with two members of the Legislative Black Caucus from Jefferson City who are frustrated with Governor Mike Parson, who is calling a special session in the next few weeks, next month, to deal with an issue involving rural car buyers, but not with gun violence on the city streets. If you want to call us with your comments and questions, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. You know, Lakeisha, Representative Bosley, there is this sense amongst folks who feel strongly about the Second Amendment that if you change the laws in the cities, you begin to set up a separate set of rules when it comes to gun ownership in Kansas City and St. Louis compared to the rest of the state, that you're starting the state down a slippery slope that will gradually wind up into chiseling away of gun rights for all Missourians in the years to come. What do you say to that?
I say, you know, let us dictate. Let's see where it goes, because right now, with us doing nothing, we're steadily climbing and we're steadily on the same path and the same trajectory of not being able to solve this issue and this epidemic. This has been an epidemic long before 2019. This has been something that has been ongoing for 10 plus years now, and it needs to stop. So if that is the feel, I feel for you and I empathize with you, but we need to do something. We need to intervene in some way. And if this is the correct avenue, we need to do it.
Representative Manlove, the feeling, at least in your caucus, is that what the pendulum when it comes to gun ownership has simply swung too far in one direction.
Correct. As I was saying, you know, I'm a veteran myself. If I had the expendable money, I'd probably own a weapon myself, but I would make sure that that was registered properly and that I had the proper training on how to use that weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, and for people who are hunters, just honestly, if you can't take out a deer in three shots, you need to practice a little bit more. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for you to have an automatic weapon. Mm-hmm. It's just not. Those are weapons of war. Those are meant to hunt people, not animals, and they should not be within our city.
What do you say about this slippery slope argument that if you start changing the rules in the cities, you're going to wind up chipping away at the gun rights of all Missourians at some point?
You know, it's interesting. People will update their cell phones and update their computers, but they won't update their mind frame. We are in, you know, when the Second Amendment was enacted, there was the weaponry was very, very different, very, very different. And it's not the same. And so we have to update our laws, just like we updated our laws to make sure that African-Americans weren't considered, you know, property. And we gave women rights to vote, even though they're equal. So we need to update these rules as well.
But the gun laws in place now, Representative, aren't that old to begin with. They're just a few years old. They've been updated to reflect the will of the state of Missouri. At least that's the theory.
That's the theory. And as you, you know, if you have an Apple phone, you update that thing about once a month. So updates are not once or twice. It's a continuous cycle to figure out what works best for the entire state, not just certain populations.
Let's go to some phone calls here. And Rick from Independence. Rick, you're on Up to Date with two members of Missouri's Legislative Black Caucus. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. This is the best debate I've heard on this subject, and it's the difference between rural Missouri, rural America, in our cities and suburban areas. The attitudes are entirely different, the viewpoints, and what we need absolutely in our congested cities is our own laws that regulate these powerful weapons and the great numbers of them that are in our communities. I follow this subject very closely, and it's a matter of what it takes to get there. How much misery are our cities going to go through before we finally realize we've got to get these guns out of our cities?
Right.
And I'll take my comment off here.
Yeah, Rick, I appreciate that. And, you know, Representative Bosley, I'm wondering what kind of response you get when you have conversations on this issue, which I'm sure are very difficult conversations, with Republican members of the General Assembly who are from rural Missouri. Can you make much headway? Can you come to any sort of agreement, even between two people talking sort of behind closed doors?
It's funny that you asked that question, because I was just thinking about, you know, having those conversations and how they would go over. And some of the ones that I have had have not gone over well. And needless to say, it's about guns, guns, guns. We love our guns. Don't try to take our guns away from us. And the need, though, is to try to get them to understand the difference in what guns are doing in our communities and what guns are doing in their communities. It's going to be a very tough conversation, but it's a needed conversation. And there should be clarity that comes from it. But as you said earlier, when people start to suggest, oh, if you do it in one place, then you're going to do it in the other. We saw that with the Better Together proposal. And that's one of the reasons why it imminently died, was because, you know, other places felt as if you do it in St. Louis City and St. Louis County, you're going to come over here and do it to us next. So I empathize and I hear them, but this is completely different.
I'm wondering, to what extent is the Legislative Black Caucus, Representative Manlove, you know, actually inviting members of the legislature from rural Missouri into the cities to see for themselves what you guys are seeing every day?
Personally, I have not done that. So that is definitely something that I'll take into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
But with a lot of the stances that our counterparts held during session, it's kind of one of those, I have a feeling I know where this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is a colleague of mine who would like to see the torment and the anguish that is happening in our urban areas, I'd be happy to take them to whether it be the coroner's office or to 12 Gates Funeral Cemetery. I'd be happy to show them.
You know, Representative Bosley, even if the governor would say, sure, let's put gun control on the agenda for the special session, how likely is it that this Republican-controlled General Assembly would even wind up passing it? Because the legislature's own leadership in recent days has said anything like that would be highly unlikely.
And it is very unlikely. And I think that it doesn't happen. And that's very disheartening to say, but it doesn't. But this is the sad reality of what we're doing. This is the sad reality of who we are electing and putting in positions. And, you know, it's not all the Republicans' fault. It's some of our blame as well for not educating properly and getting the word out about these specific issues better. And we should be doing more about that. It doesn't happen in this Republican-controlled majority. It does not happen at all.
Representative Manlove, we've been talking so far about primarily one law, which is this idea of giving the cities control over gun laws that the rest of the state might not have. I'm wondering about other options out there. Governor Parson, even in recent days, has mentioned several things. He's mentioned background checks, though he hasn't put a bill out yet. There are red flag laws that allow police to temporarily remove guns from a person who, you know, might pose a threat to others. The governor has talked about more heavily involving the state patrol in the cities. He's talked about helping with better mental health services. I just took a class at UMKC to East Patrol the other day. An officer telling my class that 45% of the arrests and the encounters that police have typically involve people who are struggling with one mental health issue or another. Do any of those ideas resonate with you? Are there other options besides giving the cities different rules than the rest of the state?
Definitely. This is not a silver bullet type issue. And it's going to take attacking this from all different sides. So whether you come from it, whether you attack it from a public health issue with the mental health and the trauma and addressing that, or whether you attack, as Representative Bosley said, there's very loose laws on ammunitions. So we can attack it from that issue. Also, there are other laws that have been filed that place sensors and cameras. So there's a plethora of ways we can attack this, and I'm willing to talk about all of them. I do not see change happening, but we definitely need to get the conversation started and put an emphasis on it so they know we're serious.
Representative Bosley, your mayor yesterday was talking about an assault weapons ban style bill. I gather you'd be interested in that and also a broad range of different ideas. Are you there, Representative Bosley? Okay, we may have lost her again, but apparently there are lots of different ideas that are out there right now. How much concern, how much worry are your constituents expressing over police, the police officers themselves? Representative Manlove, how much frustration is directed at them, and what do you sense there?
There is always, you know, historically, there's been a distrust between law enforcement and the African-American community, and anybody with eyes can understand why. But what is good is that KCPD is really making an effort to get back to community policing and has put out a cry to the Kansas City community. You know, it's not snitching. If somebody killed somebody and you saw that, that is... you're almost an accessory to the crime if you see it and you don't report it.
How is the dialogue between the Black community and the police department these days? How would you characterize it?
It's still tough, but I think that KCPD is making an effort to correct some of that. And it's going to be a step-by-step process. This isn't going to change overnight. But I appreciate what the chief is doing to move the conversation forward and to reengage in the community in an impactful way.
Alex from Graham, Missouri. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I just wanted to call in and say I thought you had a great comment about encouraging rural lawmakers to visit the city. And I would encourage the representatives to also do the same and visit rural areas. I'll listen off air for comment.
Okay. Representative Bosley, you're back with us. What do you think?
Yes. I definitely have visited rural Missouri, Marion, Hannibal, Missouri, just a few months ago to visit with one of our Republican colleagues who, even though it was on the basis of agriculture, we still had a very intense and healthy dialogue about gun laws and gun violence. So, you know, I have invited my Republican colleagues to come into the city of St. Louis before we left session, and I've only had two of them take me up on that offer. So if they're listening, you the offer still stands. You still can come. You know, I can take you, as Rep. Bland Manlove just said, you know, I can take you out here to the coroner's office or to the police stations. But the biggest thing where I would like to take them is right in the community, right in the neighborhoods where these crimes are happening, so they can get the sense and the feel of what the people who are living here are feeling. I think it could come from us as representatives, but I feel if it comes from the actual constituency, the actual base, it may make a different plea. It may be a different cry. And we saw that with the town hall that Congressman Clay and the Black caucus, the African-American caucus of the Board of Aldermen did yesterday.
Right. That's the voice of Representative Lakeisha Bosley. She's a Democrat from St. Louis, joining us from St. Louis Public Radio. Lakeisha, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And it was a pleasure to talk with you.
State Representative Ashley Bland Manlove was also here, a Kansas City Democrat. The special session of the legislature is next month. We'll be watching closely. Representative Manlove, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Come back and see us, okay? Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about an inclusivity issue in the Kansas City theater community. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you want to know what some of our on-air conversations have me thinking off mic, go to kcur.org/Kraske and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I share my thoughts and highlights from the up-to-date team in your inbox every Monday. Sign up at kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, now that the freshman members of the Kansas City Council have a few weeks under their belts, we've invited several of them in to tell us about that experience and the issues they most want the council to tackle. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, some members of the Kansas City theater community are taking stock after a controversy this summer involving the race of a main actress in a Lin-Manuel Miranda production. Sparking the debate was the casting of a white woman in a production of In the Heights by Musical Theater Heritage. The role is traditionally played by a Latina. Producers later recast the part, triggering all manner of comments on social media that range from harsh criticism of the theater to support for recognizing and oversight. Now, one group, the Barn Players, has formed an inclusion focus group aimed at encouraging theater organizations to assess their efforts at inclusion and diversity. Joining us now is Vita Bacalis, who's president of the board for the Barn Players. Vita, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Why did the controversy over the casting in the production of In the Heights touch the nerve that it did? I mean, was it the original decision to cast a white actress in a role typically played by a Latina, or was it the decision to back off that original decision? What was it?
Well, I don't want to badmouth any other theater.
I understand.
I believe that there are some playwrights who designate certain actors or parts to be played by certain people of color, whether it's Latina, whether it's Caucasian, due to history or possibly dialogue within the script.
Right.
And because of that, people have the idea that that part is to be played by that person designated by the playwright, and that should be followed.
And when that didn't happen in this case, a lot of people had a lot of things to say about it.
There were a lot of things on social media that were said.
You know, street talk has it that there were other people who were also seen as miscast in this production. Is that right?
I can't speak for it. I did not see the show.
Yeah.
I don't know what was the intent from the beginning.
You know, Vita, how surprised were you by the vigorous response that this issue generated on social media? What did you make of it?
Well, actors are pretty passionate people
to begin with.
And I was very surprised at the number, just the sheer number of comments on social media.
Yeah, and that took you by surprise a little bit to see that many people writing in, having things to say.
Yes. The people that I know who have done work at the Barn or I know socially were really warriors about it. And there was such passion. It really got us to thinking what we could do to open up this dialogue further.
Yeah, I want to get to that. But just to be clear, the passion was aimed, what, mostly at this idea that the role had been miscast? And that was very troubling to people?
There was that, but there was also just a lot of comment about what a person of color deals with on a day-to-day basis in the theater community in Kansas City.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, it was very enlightening the other night at our inclusion focus group. There were several comments that even surprised me, even though this has been a dialogue and something that inclusion and diversity has been on the on the Barnes radar screen for several years. But some of the comments, particularly poignant, was a young black actress who was still in school, and even when she felt there was miscasting or misrepresentation, even speaking with her teachers about it, she was kind of hushed. She, oh, no, this is that's not right, and you can't say that, and you have no opinion, basically. Mm-hmm. So she was not only fighting the race issue, but also her age and just being dismissed. And so that was interesting. Another thing that came up was that so many people of color just get lumped into one group when actually you're talking about Hispanics, you're talking about blacks, you're talking about Latinos. Mm-hmm. So there are several different issues that come to play that just work against so many of these actors of color.
Is there a concern that there's a lack of diversity in the Kansas City theater community?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that sentiment comes through pretty clearly?
Yes, and it's a difficult issue to deal with because from what I have heard during the last few weeks, there are many black, or I should say people of color, who are actors around town who don't feel comfortable going to certain theaters. They don't feel that the directors are ones that reach out to the people of color to come to those theaters. So there's a real segregation between where people of color feel safe being versus just being cast in a traditionally Caucasian role.
And there are certain theaters that have reputations, perhaps, that they're not open and friendly to people of color, whether it comes to casting and everything else.
I've been told that, but you'd have to ask the people of color.
Yeah. So the Barn Players, I want to get to what you decided to do because you formed this inclusion focus group. And this was what, directly in response to this latest social media controversy involving the controversy at Musical Theater Heritage?
As I said, inclusion and diversity has been on our radar screen for several years, but seeing how passionate our actors of color were on social media was the impetus.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do? What was the path forward for the Barn Players?
We had several board members there. We also had a moderator. And it was mainly done so that we could listen to the people of color to find out what the issues were that they deal with on a day-to-day basis. It was interesting that while not as many people of color actually came, I was overwhelmed by the number of Caucasians who came with the sheer desire of wanting to learn and wanting to listen.
What kinds of thoughts came out of the whole thing?
They were very excited to continue the dialogue. There was some of the comments were difficult. Most of the people felt comfortable sharing their own personal experiences from around the city. There was a lot of positivity. They wanted to continue the dialogue. We put together a reading list. We're going to be having possibly a quarterly meeting like this. And several different websites and books were recommended so that everyone there could read them, better familiarize themselves with some of the issues that people of color face in the acting community. Mm-hmm. It was a very, I think, productive evening.
Yeah. We have one of the participants in the focus group joining us now. Isle Haggins from Kansas City, Missouri, joins us. She identifies as African-American. Isle, it's nice to have you. Thanks for taking some time.
Hi, Steve. It's nice to be included in the conversation. Good morning, Vita.
Hi, Isle.
Yeah, tell us about what some of your sentiments were that you expressed at the inclusion meeting the other night. What did you have to say about all this?
Well, a couple couple of things. Just I was listening to the beginning of your broadcast, and I would just like to add to what has already been stated, and that is, what was the motivation and the catalyst to get all this moving? It wasn't to have a dialogue around what this other theater had done. Really, what they did became the tipping point and the catalyst for this conversation around, are we inclusive or are we not, and what can we do to improve? So, you know, and the invites went out, and I was one of several that responded and were in attendance.
So how inclusive is the Kansas City theater community?
Broadly, I would say not very inclusive. And I think it's important to think beyond just who we see on the stage. But we've got directors, like I'm a director. So we have directors, we have designers, we, you know, et cetera, that it takes to put on a production. I think one of the reasons that we have two significant defined as African American theater companies in town that are both very popular, active, and doing outstanding works, Casey Melting Pot and Kansas City Black Repertory Theater, is because there was a lack of inclusivity, not only in terms of getting people cast, but in terms of the works that were being produced. There are a lot of Black playwrights and important works that just aren't usually a part of a regular season for a lot of the other theaters in town.
You know, are there some professional houses here in town that have never had an actor of color in a production, as far as you know, Isle?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure about that. I don't think so. But then one has to also look at the frequency. Yeah, so it's not okay that just once every couple of seasons,
right,
or even once a season, we have perhaps one person of color. And I know we're speaking broadly, but when we think about people of color, we're thinking of multitude of races and ethnicities.
You know, we were talking earlier, Vita made the point that she was surprised that not more people of color showed up at this first inclusion hearing the other night. Were you surprised by that?
Not really, for a couple of reasons. One, I applaud the Barn for taking the initiative and presenting this forum and being the ones to start this kind of dialogue. But I'm not sure. For me, I saw it on Facebook. A lot of people aren't on Facebook, believe it or not. And I don't know beyond that scope how well it became publicized, if you will. You know, many people passed it on to other people. But one of the things that I even made the comment that night was that just coincidentally, one of those theaters that I mentioned, Casey Melting Pot, was in rehearsal. So I know a number of individuals that had said that they would be there, you know, a month or so ago when this was first organized, you know, playwrights and actors, but they were in rehearsal when it actually came to that evening and couldn't attend.
You know, as we wrap this up, I'm wondering from your standpoint, Vita, from your standpoint, so what's the path forward here? What needs to happen next?
Well, we just finished 3 weekends of director interviews for 2020 season.
Mm-hmm.
And a mandate that we put out was that each director would consider color-conscious casting, not just looking at the script and seeing what roles had traditionally been played by people of color, but looking at the script and seeing if there was any reason historically or through the dialogue that they shouldn't be played by a person of color.
Yeah.
So that's a mandate. They will be receiving the contact information from the people who are at our focus group and anyone else who's interested, and they will reach out to those people. So hopefully we'll get more people of color auditioning, being familiar with the Barn and feel safe there.
Isle, just quickly, what's the path forward from your standpoint?
I think it's a multitude of things. It's a continuation of the kind of dialogues that were set up, because the more you do it, the more consistent you are, the more that you show that it wasn't just a knee-jerk reaction, but that you really are committed to seeing changes happen. It's also the type of things that Vita just commented on. And then you go beyond that, and it's you know, talking about implicit bias is a whole nother show. But we've got to go beyond that and really bring people into an awareness, a self-awareness, because even though the good intentions are, I'm going to cast the person that's best for this role, regardless of their race or ethnicity, those implicit biases define who we think is best for the role. It's not always who can hit the note, but what I define beauty as, what I see as being, you know, what this.
I'm going to have to go, but I want you to know how much I appreciate you calling in and taking some time. Vita Bacalus, president of the board for the Barn Players, thank you for your time as well. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Coming up next, Spencer Hardwick in your weekend to-do list. Spencer Hardwick is here. He's the founder and curator of Wire KC Weekender, and he's here with a few great ideas for your Labor Day weekend. Welcome. How are you?
Steve, jazz to be here. It's a long weekend. I think I can feel it around the city. We're all kind of dragging, lunging toward this weekend.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I believe. What do you got here first up here today?
So I thought I'd start a little bit with the Eye of the Tiger, because that is the ultimate training anthem of, I think, the 20th century.
Yes.
And so have you ever done a 10K, Steve?
No, I was a 5K guy back in my running days. 10K was, I dreamed about those.
Listen, so if you're interested, the KC Running Group is doing a group training run every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. So it's a good way. They'll start at 3 miles, and they'll work their way up to 6 miles throughout the different weeks.
Yeah.
Now, here's kind of the kicker about this. The location to meet up is Saturdays at 7 a.m. at the Cheesecake Factory on the Country Club
Plaza. Oh, that's interesting.
A little bit of an ironic place to have a run.
Point well made, though.
Absolutely.
Sounds like a good time, though.
Yes.
Speaking of physical activity, here's some more for you, coming right at you.
Yes, this was a little bit of a fusion. We've seen yoga explode over the past decade across the United States. Well, now Dr. Auburn Ellis is doing yoga in the park at the Nelson Atkins Art Gallery. So she'll be doing yoga out on that front lawn with a large shuttlecock. Interesting thing about Dr. Auburn, she does a lot of work in both Kansas City and Chicago, and she's also a really accomplished artist, has a cozy little yoga studio on 54th and Troost, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And so she's the perfect person to kind of represent this fusion of art and yoga.
What a great place to do yoga, too.
Absolutely.
I'd like to do yoga on the south lawn of the Nelson. That
there you go.
Terrific.
There you
okay.
go.
That's coming up this Saturday at what time again?
Oh, sorry. That's on Sunday at 11 a.m. to 12 p.m.
in the morning. Okay.
One beginner temp. Don't compare yourself to others, Steve, when you get out there. Some people are going to be stretching like a rubber band if it's your first time. Just kind of.
Oh, I've been there before, and you watch some people wrap their legs around their necks about 5 times. You wonder, what am I doing here?
You don't have to be that person at first.
Yeah, that sounds good. Sounds like an anthem for something big and bold and amazing.
Steve, it is hard to ignore the Kansas City Renaissance Festival, especially with Labor Day weekend rapidly approaching. Whether you've been there as a child or if this is your first time, this has really been a tradition and a staple in our city since 1977. Pay heed to the exploits of jousting knights on thundering steeds, roam the village shops for unique crafts, and delight in entertainment on one of our 25 stages, and feast on delicious food and drinks from the far reach of the globe. One of my favorite things to eat there was the turkey leg growing up. I hope they still have it.
Yeah, you are taking the words out of my mouth. The turkey drumstick was the thing you live for from
it
year to year to go out there.
It is to die for. They also do wedding packages. This was a new thing for me. So if anyone's looking to get hitched, that could be a good place to go for last minute.
They've had a little bit of rough publicity lately. I hope they've overcome that and are taking heed to get on top of that issue.
Absolutely. So it's going to be from Labor Day weekend to Columbus Day, rain or shine, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. out in Bonner Springs, 628 North 126th Street.
So lots of chances to get out there and see what's going on.
100%.
Right? Okay. What we got here?
Steve, going back to the theme of fusion, Kansas Loves Bollywood, an organization, is throwing a Bollywood and Bhangra, wait for it, masquerade ball. A lot going on there. For the uninitiated, Bollywood is an Indian classical dance style that originated out of India's largest film industry, and Bhangra is a lively form of folk music and dance. Now, both of these genres have kind of been fused with hip-hop, reggae, and other popular dance forms to kind of form these mega genres of music. And so now you've seen it exploding in different places like Kansas City.
Wow. And this is going on this weekend, too. When and where?
Yes, at Madrigal, 9 p.m. Saturday, 1627 Oak. I am told that they will have mask at the door. Some people love to pick out their masquerade mask. They've got you covered.
Okay. Lots of stuff going on. And finally today, what a great voice.
Absolutely.
Still miss Bob Marley.
I really do as well. Quick story about this. Grew up, didn't hear a lot of reggae growing up in Kansas City. One of my first college parties, I was looking for hip-hop.
I've never talked to Herb and Lisa about
country.
That. Failed to expose
that,
you to
that, that was one thing did not do very well with. So I was at this college party. I was expecting to hear a lot of country, hip-hop, and rap. And I heard about 40 to 50% reggae and dancehall. I'm like, what is this? And so it really is an international form of music. So when I came back to Kansas City, I learned that it's not that reggae wasn't here, it's that I really wasn't looking for it. And so a really great lesson for us, we often think that, oh, we don't have this or that in Kansas City. This Saturday, there'll be the Kansas City Reggae and Jamboree Festival. So for all those looking for a reggae or dancehall fix, this is the place to go. Positive vibes, local acts, and great people.
I was going to say that music is so positive, and it's so hard not to like.
It's so soothing, and the perfect thing to get you started on your three-day weekend.
That's Steve. A really good recommendation. That's Spencer Hardwick with your weekend to-do list. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yesterday on the program, the co-chair of a bullying task force shared what Kansas is doing to prevent the harmful behavior in its schools. You can hear that in other previous episodes at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow on the show, some beverage advice for the long Labor Day weekend from master sommelier Doug Frost. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Elizabeth Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.